Well, hello, my friends. I have a funny story. I had a dog growing up, a boxer, a brindle boxer, and my dog's name was Hector. And my podcast guest on today's show is also named Hector, but he's not a dog. He's a pretty smart dude, especially when it comes to navigating the supplements industry. He's like a formulator. He knows a ton. So I got a chance to pick his brain for a while, and I think you're going to really dig what you come away with on this one as far as understanding the oft-confusing wide world of supplements just a tad bit better.
Well, if you're like me, you live a busy life. You don't really have time for many days off. That's why I talk so much about your mitochondria, because they generate about 90% of the energy your body uses, and keeping your mitochondria strong, it's one of the best ways to keep fatigue at bay. But these little mitochondria, darn things, are expensive to run. They use a huge amount of raw materials, especially when it comes to minerals. The problem is most people, including you and me, probably don't get enough minerals. And without minerals, your mitochondria don't have the cofactors they need to make energy. More than 97% of Americans don't get enough potassium. About 80% are deficient in magnesium. 40% are deficient in calcium. And those are three of the big ones. There's close to a dozen other trace minerals that are important for mitochondrial function, and most of us don't get enough of them, and you definitely can't get them from, say, table salt. It turns out that trying to take all the minerals you need by taking single mineral supplements isn't only hard because you need a ton of pills, but it's not the most effective way to get your minerals. That's why I take liquid, humic, and fulvic complexes. These are full-spectrum mineral supplements, which means you get all the essential minerals your body needs in one go without a daily handful of massive amounts of pills or very large capsules or anything else that's hard to swallow. I use Beam mineral supplements because they're almost 100% bioavailable. They come in a liquid form that's easy to drink. It's just two bottles. I keep them in my pantry, throw back a shot a few times a day. They're a great way to refill your mineral stores, especially for those of you out here who are haunting your sauna on a frequent basis, or sweating, or doing hot yoga, or anything else. Keep your mitochondria running strong. So if you want to up your mineral game, give Beam Minerals a try. Go to Beam Minerals, B-E-A-M, minerals.com, and use code BEN at checkout for 20% off your first order. Well, if you're tired of spending hours on cardio with minimal results, then listen up, because I got a game-changing fitness breakthrough for you. The Carol Bike, science-backed, time-saving solution trusted by experts for optimizing health and longevity. They use this special form of a workout called a rehit, which allows you to achieve superior health and fitness benefits compared to regular cardio in 90% less time. That's amazing. That's a lot of time, 90%. Studies show that by doing Carol's 5-minute workout just three times a week, you can improve your fitness by 12%, reduce your risk of type 2 diabetes by 62%, and even wind back your internal body clock by 10 years. The science is clear. Carol Bike is your ticket to a healthier and more vibrant life. You got to try it to believe it and to see what I'm saying. I mean, it's not like a walk in the park. When you're pushing hard in those intervals, you're pushing, but then it's just like over and it's done and it walks you through it. It's very motivating. It's 5 feet away from me right now. It's right here in my office, my cool little exercise toy in my office. So you get $250 off your Carol Bike. You don't have to wait any longer. You can join over 25,000 riders and visit carolbike.com today. Carolbike.com. Hey, you want to spice things up in the bedroom and boost your sexual performance and do it naturally without nasty prescription drugs? You gotta check out this stuff, Joy Mode. It's a powder. You put it in water, or if you're like me and you're a savage, you can dry powder into your mouth. Contains clinically supported doses of L-citrulline, arginine, yohimbine, and vitamin C. So after taking this stuff called their Sexual Performance Booster, again by Joy Mode, your blood levels of arginine and yohimbine increase, and that directly promotes nitric oxide production, penile tissue relaxation, and increased drive. Well, the antioxidant action of vitamin C protects the nitric oxide from oxidative degradation, which then enhances the blood flow promoting activity of the nitric oxide. They thought of everything. They're super smart over at Joy Mode, and collectively these effects enhance sex drive and blood flow naturally to the penis or to the clitoris. My wife takes it too. It's amazing. You get better orgasms, better blood flow. You can kiss nasty prescription medications goodbye and have natural guilt-free energy for boosting your sexual performance. You can get 20% off your first order from Joy Mode. How? Go to usejoymode.com/greenfield. That's usejoymode.com/greenfield. J-O-Y. Usejoymode.com/greenfield. They'll give you 20% off your first order.
He's an expert in human performance and nutrition. voted America's top personal trainer and one of the globe's most influential people in health and fitness. His show provides you with everything you need to optimize physical and mental performance. He is Ben Greenfield.
Power. Speed. Mobility. Balance. Whatever it is for you, that's the natural movement. Get out there. When you look at all the studies done, studies that have shown the greatest efficacy.
All the information you need in one place, right here, right now, on the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast.
Hey folks, it's Ben Greenfield, and if you're like me, you take supplements sometimes, but where they came from, how they were made, how that ingredient label came to say what it says about the ingredients or claims to have in the actual bottle of whatever it is that you're taking, it's a real rabbit hole and a real can of worms, and those are the best two analogies I can think of to describe what goes on in the supplement industry. And occasionally I like to get industry insiders on this show, folks who kind of understand the nuts and bolts of what's going on when, say, you toss back a handful of capsules or take some kind of an oil or powder or tablet or anything else. And the guy that I managed to get on today's show is probably one of the most well-educated fellas who exists in the nutrition supplement industry. His name is Dr. Hector Lopez. He's an MD, and what I like about him is he's also a certified strength conditioning coach, so he understands exercise. He's got a big background in sports medicine and exercise science, nutritional biochemistry, metabolism, and clinical research. He's actually the CMO and the partner of Center for something called Applied Health Sciences, which is this multidisciplinary clinical research organization, and they actually focus on really increasing the body of evidence within the dietary supplement and the natural product and the functional medicine and the functional foods and beverage industry. And I'll let him speak a little bit more to that, as well as his participation in something called Nutra Vigilance, which basically acts to make sure that you're not going to die or have explosive diarrhea or get a third eye growing out your head when you take a supplement. He actually has a pretty starred history in the supplement industry as well, and consults a whole bunch of different professional athletes and professional athlete organizations, from the NFL to the NBA to the MLB and beyond. And so I'll let him tell you a little bit more about his history and how he got into all this in the first place. But I've been emailing Dr. Lopez and talking to Dr. Lopez a lot, just because, as many of you know, I have this new nutrition supplement company called Keon, and I'm really working on bringing out some very unique formulations, some novel delivery mechanisms, and most importantly, supplements that are of an extremely high quality compared to a lot of the crap that you'll find out there in the nutrition supplement industry. And so Dr. Lopez has been really helping me navigate through that as well. So Dr. Lopez, welcome to the show, man.
Awesome, man. Well, thanks for having me on. I've got to say, I'm a little embarrassed with that intro, man. That was a glorious intro, so thank you for that.
You should be more embarrassed, because before we started recording, you told me you'd never even heard the podcast before.
Yeah, that's true. Guilty,
have you heard a podcast before? Like, do you listen to podcasts at all?
I do on occasion. I have. I've listened to some of Tim Ferriss and Joe Rogan, and I've listened to some podcasts when I'm traveling sometimes. But you know what? I'm gonna have to listen to yours now when I'm traveling too.
Those guys are jokers. Their podcasts are teeny tiny podcasts. Nobody listens to them. You got it.
Who are they?
Who the heck are they? Right. So how'd you get into the whole supplement industry, man? I mean, you know, you're a physician, but did you kind of start off being interested in nutraceuticals and pharmaceuticals and supplements, or was this something that you developed over time?
Yeah, you know, it's been an interesting journey, actually. So I would have to say that what's happened to me is I've actually just come full circle, to be honest. So, I'll tell you a funny story, actually. So going back to when I was probably about 11 or 12 years old,
And I remember actually, I don't think I've actually ever told this story like on any, you know, prior radio or podcast or any show before. So,
oh boy.
So there we go, man.
We get
there
the exclusive, go. Baby.
You're getting the exclusive. So actually, a pretty funny story. I grew up in Jersey, in North Jersey, so North Bergen. And North Bergen, I'm not sure if you're familiar with that was the initial headquarters and the very first vitamin shop, the vitamin shop store, the franchise of stores of retail.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've seen those
stores across the country. Yeah,
I used to wander through those and go straight to that little metal shopping cart in the middle that had all the bargain bin stuff. You know, grab the fish oil that was knocked down from $35 down to $2, or you know, just try any of the fringe powders with the man in a can posing in the front of them. So yeah, I've wandered through a few vitamin shops in my time.
I'm sure you have. I'm sure you have. So here I am, an 11 or 12 year old kid, right? And I say, you know, already at that time, I love the sciences, but I also love everything athletics, anything sports related. I remember reading through my dad's like old school Weider pubs, you know, the magazines like Muscle and Fitness, or sometimes as we used to call it, Muscle and Fiction,
or Flex. And so,
right, Flex, yeah. All those, you know, Iron Man way back when. And but I was always mostly drawn to and intrigued by the science and the mechanisms and anything that would delve into even touching upon the science of how ingredients worked, how bioactive compounds really did what they did, how they could support enhancing essentially what I didn't know at the time was human performance, you know, whether it be cognitive or physical on or off the field. And so when I was about 11 and a half or 12, I actually went to the main, this is the big headquarters vitamin shop. It's a huge distribution warehouse, right? And there's a small little storefront. This was in the, I guess this was probably in the 80s, late 80s or so. And I approached the front desk and I asked for a manager, because I remember telling my parents, I said, you know, I want to work at Vitamin Shop, but I want to do something in their labs. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to work on the, you know, I want to do something chemistry related or biochemistry related. And maybe I could do an internship, or maybe I could just volunteer. I don't care, whatever it took, right? So it was pretty funny because I approached the front counter and asked for the manager. He brought the manager in. And I asked him, I said, you know, I'm really interested in science. I'm a great science student. I'm straight A science student. I'm great at math. I'd love to work in your lab. You know, where's your biochemistry lab here, on the office? So after about 30 or 40 seconds of straight laughing, you know, they basically said, oh kid, I hate to break it to you, but we don't really do any of that here, you know? So that was I was struck with the harsh reality. You know, it's kind of like finding out Santa Claus wasn't real.
Yeah. We don't test jack shit, baby. We just sell it.
Yeah, exactly. We just distribute and sell. We're good at the marketing piece, you know, that we're good at. So the blowhorn. So if you can write marketing copy, we'll definitely do that. So that was the very first introduction into the harsh reality that obviously I had a lot to learn about the industry. But I was only, you know, whatever, 11 and a half, 12 at the time. And so basically, look, I was a decent athlete growing up, but definitely not elite, you know, by any stretch. I was not one of those guys that would walk into the gym and, had that sort of like mesomorphic physique. You know, they'd inhale a couple times in the gym, walk out, and, you know, they'd put on a few pounds of lean body mass, you know, over a month. That was definitely not me. So then I started getting more intrigued and more interested in the science of, hey, if I wasn't going to be a pro athlete and I wasn't going to be able to play professional baseball, for example, then maybe I could find a way to make other talented athletes better, right? Make good athletes great, make great athletes exceptional. And so that's sort of got me down the path of everything that I looked at science-wise throughout high school. I always looked at through the lens of, I wonder how this plays into nutrition. How does this play into strength and conditioning, exercise physiology, exercise science, really the science of human performance and athletic feats? So that really was my, you know, my genesis. I loved molecular biology and biochemistry, but I also had this passion for nutrition and the more macro stuff of how it actually all happens, you know, from a molecular level all the way up to the macro level. So then I went to undergrad at Rutgers and double majored in nutritional sciences and molecular bio, and I minored in exercise science.
Nice.
So that was it. That was basically, if you, in a nutshell, you know, I was in heaven because I was studying
for sure.
That's
actually kind of similar because what I did was I put together my own self-directed master's degree course when I went to University of Idaho, and I thought, well, there's three things that I'm interested in: exercise, nutrition, and supplements. Yeah, because at that point I was a bodybuilding, you know, totally geeked out bro science enthusiast. I was
all in. You were all in.
Dude, I was like 215 pounds. I was 3.5% body fat, and you know, I pretty much lived on creatine and that what's that central nervous system stimulant, Redline, I think it was called.
Oh yeah. From BPX.
Redline. Yeah. I was sponsored by ABB, so I did a lot of these ABB bodybuilding protein shakes, and you know, crapped out a straw every day. Had tuna can for tuna cans.
Eating straight out of the tuna can, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. You put a little relish, a little ketchup in there to make it taste good. These days, I probably would have done stevia on top of tuna or something crazy like that. But anyways, yeah. So I did exercise science combined with a lot of advanced human nutrition coursework and a lot of pharmacology coursework. So I spent a lot of time in the microbiology lab and the biochemistry lab doing my practicums and my internships. And so it's kind of interesting. We wound up probably taking a lot of the similar classes in undergrad and graduate school, but you just decided to put on the big boy pants and become a doctor. Whereas
I became a
personal trainer.
Whereas you went the personal training route. Well, you know, I have a ton of respect for, you know, the fitness profession in general, right? I mean, that's, you know, I ended up getting my CSCS, as you mentioned, real early on. I was actually a CSCS before I was a physician, certainly before I got my master's in nutritional biochem. So, yeah, I dig it, man. I get where your interests were at. And again, a lot of them were probably aligned, as you said.
Yeah.
So what happened to me is, interestingly enough, I had no plans to go to medical school because I always felt like that was just going to get in the way. I mean, you know, in undergrad, you know how you meet with your advisors, and you know, obviously, if you've got good, you know, if you're doing well academically, they feel like you've got some potential to sort of, I guess, beef up their stats if you can go to med school and score well on the MCAT. But I, you know, every time they pushed me in that direction, I said, man, I'm really not interested. Because ultimately, I wanted to probably go to grad school, get a PhD, and then get into the industry somehow, right? That was my plan probably all the way up to about my junior year in undergrad. And then my dad came down with some really strange or odd symptoms. He developed diplopia and some neurological symptoms. And then I was forced to get closer to medicine from a completely different perspective. And so when my dad, he was seeing a bunch of neurologists. I was going to a lot of the visits with him, neuro-ophthalmologists, et cetera. I realized in my communications with them, you know, I was always trying to, I was kind of probably in their eyes like, oh, this is the wise kid, the wise guy, you know, 19-year-old who thinks he knows a thing or two about patient care, and he's good in the sciences, and he's trying to show me up. But I just realized there was such a gap between what was happening in medicine in general, right, and what we were discovering on the applied exercise physiology, nutritional biochemistry, applied dietary supplementation, advanced supplementation, even in the life extension longevity areas, right, of nutrition. So I felt like there was such a gap there, like there were two different islands and they were operating in silos. So for me, I felt like, you know what, I think I should go to med school and try to bridge that gap. Ultimately, I felt like if I went into some sports medicine field, like I could still do both, right, a little bit. And so I decided pretty late, actually, it was probably late my junior year into my senior year, Took my MCATs and did well, and then ended up going to med school, and then ended up in Chicago after that.
Where'd you go to med school?
PM&R. Robert Wood Johnson, it's now Rutgers Medical School,
yeah.
So it's
okay.
Brunswick.
Cool. Yeah, I also, you know, I briefly joked that I went to personal training, but I also took the MCATs, and I got accepted to six different medical schools, and none of them were the medical schools that I wanted. So I threw a hissy fit, and I went back and and worked for about 4 months in the medical industry selling surgical tools and hips and knees.
Oh, wow.
And
really?
Just became completely like I wanted to be an orthopedic surgeon. I got totally disillusioned with the medical industry, and then I kind of pivoted and went back into fitness after that gig, working for Biomet over in Post Falls, Idaho. Mm-hmm. So I never actually went to medical school, obviously. Anyways, that's okay, because there's guys like you who did and wound up getting
well,
into the supplement
industry.
Well,
that's cool, though. Again, though, still a lot of, definitely a lot of alignment there in
yeah.
terms of our interests.
Yeah,
that's
funny.
So then I ended up becoming a Midwesterner for a while. I did my physiatry or PM&R, you know, physical medicine rehabilitation. That was my specialty that I chose because, you know, again, advisors and counselors trying to push me into a competitive like neurosurgical or orthopedic surgical field. And I just felt like, man, I just don't want to be in the OR. I want to be able to really integrate. Honestly, you know, a lot of people thought I was crazy, but ended up starting to get involved in an interest groups, various sports medicine interest groups, been saying, listen, you may think I'm crazy, but I actually have this business plan. I developed a business plan while I was in med school that I wanted to integrate all of these things, right? All the things that I'm sure you know, had we gone to school together, who knows? You know, we might still be practicing together because it sounds like you probably would have been interested in something like this that essentially was a complete integration of medicine, physical therapy, chiropractic. We'd have a little gym, like a studio, a fitness studio in the office. A procedure suite to be able to do PRP and regenerative injection techniques. And this yeah. was, you know, this was in the 90s. You know,
yeah. This
90s.
Is so funny, dude. Cause when I graduated, I partnered with a physician, not when I graduated, but after a couple of years working as a personal trainer, after I got my master's degree, I partnered with a physician and we opened this one-stop shop for sports medicine. We had one of the first PRP units, that when they
wait,
were,
did you guys
were
use, did
developed.
You use Harvest? Did you use Harvest PRP? You know, you remember that? That was one of the first ones.
I don't remember the brand, but it was one of the first ones. Okay. We did, we had full high speed video cameras for, 3D biomechanical analysis of gaits and, you know, awesome. for cycling and for exercising. We had, you know, EKG setup. We had indirect calorimetry and VO2 max testing. We had a full biomechanics and exercise physiology lab that I was the director of. I was the director of sports performance.
That's awesome.
It was called Champion Sports Medicine. That was my job. That was my role for like 6 or 7 years. So yeah, I actually,
wow.
I did wind up kind of doing something. It sounds kind of similar to what you were doing, except I
yeah,
was the,
that's crazy.
I was just the peon, not the physician.
It seems like that's the theme you keep getting into here, but no, man, that's I think it's awesome because again, very parallel paths here. And so long story short, I ended up going to Northwestern and doing my residency out there and then fellowship and continuing to work on the business plan, essentially, that I said, look, I'm going to invest whatever I have, anything I have. I'm not going to join a group because I felt like joining a group at that point, you'd join a surgical group, for example, most of the time. And as you probably know, because you worked in that area, in that setting, you know, the surgeon is probably going to be a little more aggressive and is going to call the shots. And, you know, here we wanted to kind of shift the paradigm and make it effectively a non-surgical musculoskeletal institute that was integrative and functional. So we'd have nutrition protocols that, you know, we'd work with an RD who would also see patients. So it was sort of a one-stop shop where patients would come in for some ailment, let's say rotator cuff tendinopathy, and they would leave better, you know, after rehabbing their rotator cuff, and they would leave more functional And there, if you were to take a look at their biomarkers across the board, you know, they were effectively younger and more functional when they left than when they came in. So that was the model. And so after my residency, I invested everything I had to open that model. I partnered with a couple of chiropractors in New Jersey. We opened that model. It flourished. I mean, as you can imagine, like, this was earlier in the 2000s, there was really a dearth of that, in at least in this area, in New Jersey, New York. You know, there was really no one doing everything to that extent. And so the model just flourished. So ended up getting to the point where grew aggressively, brought in a couple of other partners, which was interesting because, you know, I think the rapid growth and maybe not being careful enough with selecting one of my partners ended up effectively causing a rift. And after about, you know, there were seven offices of this model. We ended up essentially breaking up. I sold my interest back to the practice. He ended up showing some, you know, some sort of colors that were a little ugly. And, you know, I've since forgiven him for everything that happened, but I've actually thanked him because if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't have been thrusted all the way back to come full circle to get into the industry again. Because at that time, I was consulting part-time. I was doing some ghostwriting for a few big sports nutrition brands that, you know, the big boys that now are owned by Glambia and actually, as you mentioned before, like Redline, like VPX. Mm-hmm. I was also consulting with running clinical trials for some dietary ingredients and finished products in the industry with Tim Ziegenfuss at the time. And we were just kind of working part-time in that capacity because, you know, as you can imagine, running a booming practice with seven offices and, you know, many employees was definitely taking up a lot of time while growing the family as well. So finally, the breakup really of between one of my partners and I is what thrusted me full bore into the industry again. And so Tim Ziegenfuss, who's a PhD exercise physiologist, he used to be the chief science officer for BioTest and T-Nation. You remember those guys?
Yep. Oh, yeah, for sure. I've written some articles for T-Nation. What was the other one you said?
BioTest.
That's bodybuilding.com's supplement line, yeah?
No, so it's actually T-Nation. So T-Nation developed their own
line. Oh, yeah, that's T-Nation supplement line.
BioTest Labs. Yeah, out of Colorado.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right, yeah. Sorry, I get my websites mixed up that have the tanned, ripped men and women on them. There's just so many.
Yeah, they are now. They're a dime a dozen now. But they're all probably, a lot of them are going to go away anyway soon.
Wait, why do you say that?
Well, you know, the big disruptor, I guess, in terms of, they're not necessarily go away, but they're going to change. They're going to have to change. They're going to have to adapt because the big disruptor is coming, right? Which is Amazon. So,
really?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Well, they're, you know, they've already shown signs of wanting to get into the industry with their Elements, the Amazon Elements line.
I didn't know anything about that. So Amazon is launching its own nutritional supplements line, huh?
Yeah. Well, they launched already. Yeah. It's called Elements.
Is it good?
They are. Well, they're doing some cool things. I must say they're doing some great things. Like, you know, they're using the QR code where you can scan the label and get the original C of A. You get the original lot and production information from the when it was manufactured, where it was manufactured. So I think, you know, there's a lot more of that transparency, full transparency, full disclosure. They're doing some cool things, actually. And so that's why I'm saying they're going to be the big disruptor because, you know, their scale, right? And
that's interesting. But they're probably going to do like a lot of the popular stuff, right? Like fish oil, multivitamins, greens,
stuff
like that. Right,
that's how they started. Yeah. You're right. That's exactly what they did. Magnesium, curcumin, a generic, you know, turmeric, like a 95% curcuminoid turmeric. I believe they did a D3, a vitamin D. And I think they've got a calcium supplement as well for women. So they're going to continue to expand their line. But who knows where they go next in terms of you know, the writing's sort of on the wall, right? That they're probably going to want to dive into some of these other functional categories, maybe.
Yeah, so. Maybe. I don't know. Yeah. You know this because we've been talking, but I'm really not that interested anymore in the, you know, the basics, right? Like the multivitamins and the fish oils, just because there are so many companies like Amazon that are doing those type of things. You know, I'm wanting to develop, as we are developing, a lot more very, very mm-hmm. unique formulations that are combinations of things that I've discovered and used myself, you know, that are a mashup of a lot of things, you know, for longevity and ketosis and gut and things like that. So basically, as a physician, you kind of transitioned yeah. away from like the traditional patient and clinical practice and dove right. into working with a lot of these supplement companies. And you've got this thing now called NutraVigilance. Is that mm-hmm. is that kind of where everything wound up?
No, so basically I partnered with Tim at CAHS, which is that Center for Applied Health Sciences, that's the Human Clinical Research Center, basically, a research institute. So we do all our clinical trials at CAHS in Ohio. Then Supplement Safety Solutions is another company with, I have a different partner there, Dr. Steve Schmitz. And what we do there is that's mostly a regulatory compliance safety-based company, right? So it works on a different aspect of the industry. So CAHS is doing clinical trials to validate and substantiate safety and efficacy of just about, you know, many of the most common ingredients that are available right now on the market, to even multi-ingredient finished products as well. We do studies there at CAHS. So CAHS is the research that validates the safety and efficacy. Then Supplement Safety Solutions does NutraVigilance, which is basically now pre- and post-market safety surveillance. So what that means is if you're a company like, for example, like Keon wants to know that when they bring a product to market and they introduce it into interstate commerce to their consumer base, it's important for them to abide by some of these federal regulations that are in place. For example, since 2007, there's something called the Non-Prescription Drug Dietary Supplement Consumer Protection Act. And what that act does is it lays out a set of rules and guidelines that mandates that anyone who sells a product into commerce, anything commercial for an ingestible product that's a dietary supplement, is supposed to have an adverse event report and a customer complaint, like a product quality complaint system in place. Now, you probably wouldn't be surprised. I was going to say you'd be surprised how many brands out there don't have a system, right? You guys are obviously different because, you know, right from the beginning, you made that a priority. But there are many brands that are still flying out there without an actual legitimate system that can actually keep an eye on the cookie jar, if you will.
I want to ask you what that means for people who are actually grabbing a supplement. But and by the way, not to distract us too much or dive down too deep of a rabbit hole, but I just checked out that Amazon supplements line.
Yeah.
I don't like it, dude. Like they've got like their multivitamin is like folic acid grown on yeast. It's like synthetic folic acid, which is mm-hmm. you know, it's kind of bad news yeah. bears for people who've got like methylation
MTHFR,
issues.
Yeah.
Yeah, their vitamin D is like a crapload of vitamin D. There's no vitamin K or anything in there, so you get increased risk of calcification. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Somebody needs to tell Amazon what's up, cuz I wouldn't use this stuff.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you think about it, if you're them, they're trying to dip their toe in the water and be very careful with, you know, I'm sure they've got a team, an army of attorneys and legal guys that are, it's almost like the product development team there is probably being run mostly by regulatory and by legal, which is not the way you want to run a company if you want to be innovative and truly, you know, bringing something of a little more unique value, at least.
Well, if you're like me, you live a busy life. You don't really have time for many days off. That's why I talk so much about your mitochondria, because they generate about 90% of the energy your body uses. And keeping your mitochondria strong is one of the best ways to keep fatigue at bay. But these little mitochondria, darn things, are expensive to run. They use a huge amount of raw materials, especially when it comes to minerals. The problem is most people, including you and me, probably don't get enough minerals. And without minerals, your mitochondria don't have the cofactors they need to make energy. More than 97% of Americans don't get enough potassium. About 80% are deficient in magnesium. 40% are deficient in calcium. And those are three of the big ones. There's close to a dozen other trace minerals that are important for mitochondrial function, and most of us don't get enough of them, and you definitely can't get them from, say, table salt. It turns out that trying to take all the minerals you need by taking single mineral supplements isn't only hard because you need a ton of pills, but it's not the most effective way to get your minerals. That's why I take liquid, humic, and fulvic complexes. These are full spectrum mineral supplements, which means you get all the essential minerals your body needs in one go without a daily handful of massive amounts of pills or very large capsules or anything else that's hard to swallow. I use Beam mineral supplements because they're almost 100% bioavailable. They come in a liquid form that's easy to drink. It's just two bottles. I keep them in my pantry, throw back a shot a few times a day. They're a great way to refill your mineral stores, especially for those of you out here who are haunting your sauna on a frequent basis or sweating or doing hot yoga or anything else. Keep your mitochondria running strong. So if you want to up your mineral game, give Beam Minerals a try. Go to Beam Minerals, B-E-A-M, minerals.com and use code BEN at checkout for 20% off your first order. Well, if you're tired of spending hours on cardio with minimal results, then listen up because I got a game-changing fitness breakthrough for you. The Carol Bike, science-backed, time-saving solution trusted by experts for optimizing health and longevity. They use this special form of a workout called a rehit, which allows you to achieve superior health and fitness benefits compared to regular cardio in 90% less time. That's amazing. That's a lot of time, 90%. Studies show that by doing Carol's 5-minute workout just three times a week, you can improve your fitness by 12%, reduce your risk of type 2 diabetes by 62%, and even wind back your internal body clock by 10 years. The science is clear. Carol Bike is your ticket to a healthier and more vibrant life. You got to try it to believe it and to see what I'm saying. I mean, it's not like a walk in the park. When you're pushing hard in those intervals, you're pushing, but then it's just like over and it's done and it walks you through it. It's very motivating. It's 5 feet away from me right now. It's right here in my office, my cool little exercise toy in my office. So you get $250 off your Carol Bike. You don't have to wait any longer. You can join over 25,000 riders and visit carolbike.com today. carolbike.com.
Hey, you want to spice things up in the bedroom and boost your sexual performance and do it naturally without nasty prescription drugs? You got to check out this stuff, Joy Mode. It's a powder. You put it in water, or if you're like me and you're a savage, you can dry powder into your mouth. Contains clinically supported doses of L-citrulline, arginine, yohimbine, and vitamin C. So after taking this stuff called their Sexual Performance Booster, again by Joy Mode, your blood levels of arginine and yohimbine increase, and that directly promotes nitric oxide production, penile tissue relaxation, and increased drive. Well, the antioxidant action of vitamin C protects the nitric oxide from oxidative degradation, which then enhances the blood flow promoting activity of the nitric oxide. They thought of everything. They're super smart over at Joy Mode, and collectively these effects enhance sex drive and blood flow naturally to the penis or to the clitoris. My wife takes it too. It's amazing. You get better orgasms, better blood flow. You can kiss nasty prescription medications goodbye and have natural guilt-free energy for boosting your sexual performance. You can get 20% off your first order from Joy Mode. How? Go to usejoymode.com/greenfield. That's usejoymode.com/greenfield. J-O-Y. Usejoymode.com/greenfield. They'll give you 20% off your first order.
You were talking about how a lot of these nutrition supplements companies, and you know, we don't want to kick the horse to death because I think a lot of people know that it's not that well regulated, the nutrition supplements industry, and in many cases folks can just push out there whatever they want and slap anything mm-hmm. they want on the label, even if the bottle doesn't contain what it says that it contains. But when it comes to an issue like that, like, what are some examples of common things that people are consuming that really aren't regulated that well? I mean in terms of one bottle versus another, what are some of the shocking things that you've found in the nutrition supplement industry?
Okay, good. Yeah. All right, so obviously, without giving anyone up, because as you can imagine, in this position, especially under supplement safety solutions, sometimes I feel like a priest or a rabbi, right? We end up finding out everyone's darkest, deepest secrets, right? In terms of, wow, that really happened. But some of these things that occur, they happen because of human error. They're not necessarily intentional, right? So I'll throw that caveat out there. Not everything is done with intentional malice, right? But I will say, look, we were involved in a situation where there was a disgruntled employee at a contract manufacturer, right? And a pretty prominent sports nutrition brand, unfortunately, ended up succumbing to having their product run on a line that this disgruntled employee was employed on and was during his shift. And let's just say that he introduced less than desirable items into product. And that's something that we were able to discover and do a root cause analysis and investigation. And, you know, that's part of what we do. That's one of the extreme reasons, right, why the FDA mandates that if you're going to introduce a product into interstate commerce and you're going to have consumers using your product, that's why you need to have a surveillance system in place, even after the fact, after you've produced the product. Because sometimes the only way you ever find out is if you're surveilling what's happening, right, with consumer complaints. So that's an example of something that ended up really shocking us. You know, that's something that happened maybe 5 or 6 years ago with a very prominent brand.
When you say introducing a foreign compound into the nutrition supplement, you make it sound like, forget the name of that movie where the guy's like putting hair and, you know, jacking off into people's food. Are we talking about like stuff like that, or just basically like, you know, steroids, hormones, actual compounds that people normally wouldn't want in a supplement
Yeah.
Or is this guy like,
no, like it, putting it is kind of like more like the first, more like,
oh,
the,
gosh, yeah, I was hoping, yeah, man. I was afraid you'd say that. Okay, well, that's nasty. So this is a contract manufacturer. When you say contract manufacturer, what you mean is that unlike a company like, say, Thorne, for example, these supplements were not being produced in-house by that company, but that company had contracted with a manufacturer to actually make that supplement for them, which is a very common practice in the nutrition supplement industry.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But this was not a manufacturing practice that was being well-regulated, and so this guy was able to do that.
Exactly. That's exactly it. So they didn't have the appropriate processes. So really what happened is the problem there starts with GMP, right? That contract manufacturer didn't have their I's dotted and their T's crossed when it comes to good manufacturing practices.
So they weren't GMP.
Yeah, you know, they were, but they weren't following, right? They had an SOP. But what good is having an SOP if you're actually not following your SOP with the appropriate oversight and in-process controls and et cetera? So they weren't following their GMP guidelines.
Okay. And for people who don't know what an SOP is, you're just referring to standard operating procedures for that particular manufacturing facility.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's correct.
And for people who aren't familiar with CGMP, can you describe that?
Yeah, so CGMP is it's now federally mandated good manufacturing practices, which is basically it's regulated by something called 21 CFR, which is the Code of Federal Regulations. It's basically federal law, and it's Part 111 and 110. So Part 110 covers food. Part 111 covers dietary supplements. And for your audience who may not know how do you know the difference? The quick and dirty, the easy way to tell is if you look on the back of your product or your bottle, if there's a supplement facts panel, it's a dietary supplement. If it's a nutrition facts panel, then technically it is regulated as a food. So that's the quick and dirty way. Now, what the CGMP does is it basically sets up a set of rules and regulations and standards about how to run everything from, let's say you've got a pre-workout product that's got four ingredients in it, right? Now, those ingredients need to come into the manufacturing facility somehow. They need to be delivered there. So they get delivered with paperwork. Which includes it's supposed to include a certificate of analysis, but part of the GMP processes doesn't allow you to just trust that C of A because, you know, they can be doctored and they could be, you know, obviously fraudulent C of A's. So what they make you do is they make you quarantine per GMP. You're supposed to quarantine in a locked area, or in, at least in an area that that is clearly demarcated and separated off to the side. Any incoming raw materials are quarantined before they get tested again, confirmed, and then released into inventory. So ingredients come in, they get tested, they get verified, then they get released from quarantine, and now they go into inventory, and now they can be used for the staging process, which requires something called a master manufacturing record for every product that's manufactured. Then there's something called the batch production record. Once it goes into production with the milling and the mixing and the filling of the product into either capsule, tablets, if it's a powder, you know, like a ready to mix powder, then it goes directly into a container. Then there's the late, it covers, so GMP covers all of that from soup to nuts, from start to finish, including labeling, bottling, what you do with the inventory, how and when it gets released for shipping. So again, if it's a contract manufacturer that's working on behalf of the brand is also supposed to have their own way of verifying that the contract manufacturer they're using is in fact following GMP guidelines. So they're supposed to be audited on a routine basis, and then the brand themselves is supposed to test and release the finished product, the finished good, before it goes into interstate commerce, before a consumer, a customer, is able to purchase it.
But so what you're saying is a lot of companies don't do that. They take shortcuts.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, because right, it takes resources and money to do all this, right? And so yeah, if a company is motivated by economics and they're trying to save a buck, then this is an area they can certainly save a few bucks in, right? Is the process, the GMP process. In addition to, they can save a buck by using inferior quality ingredients, raw materials. You know, those are other ways they can obviously save a dollar or two.
Okay, so to do things right, like let's use, for example, you know, people, you know, like there are a few supplements that I take every day, like a multivitamin, fish oil, creatine. You know, those are some of my daily staples. Let's say fish oil, for example. Like walk me through what it would look like for a company to be doing everything right when it comes to designing a supplement like that, that a lot of folks are taking. Like what would be the steps that you would love to see a company going through, or that people listening in could look into when it comes to the nutritional supplement that they're using as a staple, and whether or not the company making that is actually going through each of the steps that you would like to see a company going through?
Yeah, so let's use your example of fish oil, for example. So fish oil is a good one because actually, so I used to do some consulting for Nordic Naturals. They're definitely one of the leading, I'd say, you know, fish oil brands in the world right now. So one of the things you want to make sure is first there's your raw material, right? So what's your source of the raw material? So fish oil, you can source fish oil from different biomasses, right? So you can source it from sardines, you can source it from salmon, you can source it from any other fatty fish, anchovies. Some of the things you'd want to make sure if you're going from scratch and you're building a fish oil brand per se is first you want to make sure that your source is fresh, that it's reliable, that it's sustainable, and that you can test it, obviously, for purity and potency. So with fish oil, right, you want to make sure that it's fresh. So one of the ways you can check for oil freshness is you can see if it's oxidized, right? You can check for peroxidation values. Now, this is an area where it can get a little controversial because there actually could be a role, believe it or not, for consuming somewhat what people would consider, well, that's rancid fish oil or rancid oil. Why would you ever place rancid oil into your body? Why would you ever consume that? Well, there's actually a hormetic. There's a theory of if you take, like, you know, salmon oil, for example, and ferment it, Some of those oxidized byproducts are actually signaling agents, and you can actually take advantage of the hormetic response, and your body can develop an endogenous antioxidant response to it. So it's almost like you're introducing a stress, mm-hmm. and then you're adapting to that stress. But let's just say you want the freshest fish oil possible, right? Because that could be a little controversial, and that could be another discussion for another day or an article. But you want to check for peroxidation value. Then, of course, you want to see how clean that oil is. So you want to make sure that it's independently tested using something called ICP mass spec, which is mass spectrometry. It's a spectroscopy is a way to basically measure the level of heavy metals in the product. So you want to see what kind of heavy metal load it contains. You also want to, when you're talking about fish oil, you want to test for things like dioxins or persistent organic pollutants, things like PCBs or, you know, polychlorinated biphenyl compounds. And then once you have clean oil, you want to keep it clean. So one of the things, for example, that the best fish oil companies in the world do is when they source their fish and they start to extract the oil, they actually start doing it and keep it under what's called a nitrogen blanket. So they use nitrogen gas to keep not only the temperature down and under control, but also when you have nitrogen gas in a closed loop system, you're basically displacing oxygen. So you're able to keep your oil a lot fresher, right? So you're preventing the oxidation from taking place. So after you know that you've assured exceptional freshness and, you know, you've got high quality oil and you're keeping it that way, then you want to basically have control over your entire supply chain or as much as possible. And if you're the kind of company that cannot have control over the entire supply chain from if you're talking about a botanical product, from seed to shelf, or in the case of oil, you know, from fish to bottle, then you should at least have an incredible amount of oversight over that entire process. And there should be a chain of custody that allows you to see everything that your oil has been through, what it's been exposed to, what processes has it been exposed to, what temperatures has it been maintained under, how has it been cared for throughout the entire supply chain until it gets to the bottling facility or manufacturing facility, which then goes into those stages that we talked about before, right, into GMP.
How many people?
There's a lot that goes into, you know, a good quality product.
How many companies in the supplements industry do you think are actually jumping through all these hoops with their products?
Oh gosh, man, it has gotten better. I will say that, and part of the reason it's gotten better is because of exposure, right? I mean, social media, for example, it is keeping more companies honest. I would say it's probably, you know, you have tiers. You probably have a top, like, quartile. You could probably break it up into quartiles. Like, you have a top 25% where a quarter of the brands are really following all the necessary steps to ensure that they're providing a high quality product to their consumers. In terms of following all these steps and jumping through all these hoops. But then you've got another 25% that's probably doing maybe 75% of it. And then you've got another, you know, probably half or 50% that's probably only following 50% of these guidelines or these, you know, let's call them best practices, right? So,
how can people know when they look at the actual bottle that they're consuming? Like, what are the actual things people should be looking for on the label? Are there markers? Are there ways that, aside from like calling a company or visiting that company's website and scrolling through, you know, whatever laboratory certificate of analysis or things like that, that people can actually look for?
Yeah, so that would be the main thing to look for are if you call, let's say you're interested in a brand, you should be able to ask the brand to produce certificate of analysis of the batch or the lot of every product that they are producing. So if you're about to purchase a product and you've got a lot number, you should be able to call the company or the brand and ask and require that they provide you with a certificate of analysis showing the results of that C of A for any of the major marker compounds that they've chosen in order to maintain to assure that that product contains what it says it contains. Now you do have third party purveyors like NSF, for example, right? NSF Certified for Sport, which definitely is an organization that puts companies through the hoops of making sure that they follow not only appropriate GMP guidelines, but in order to get NSF certified for sport, they also need to be prepared in a manner that minimizes any risk of cross-contamination, like for an athlete that's tested, for example, a tested athlete. Same thing for Informed Choice, Informed Sport. It's another good one. Banned Substance Control Group is another good one. So there's probably a top three that you can look for if you want to make sure that a product is manufactured in a way that it will minimize cross-contamination or adulteration.
Okay, what were the three again?
So NSF, okay. Informed Choice / Informed Sport, and then the third is BSCG or Banned Substance Control Group.
What about that Australian one, the TG?
TGA?
Yeah, yeah, TGA.
So TGA is different in that they don't test the finished product. It's not necessarily as much of an issue with brands. TGA is more of a level of certification that a contract manufacturer has to undergo in order to be TGA certified. So that's more on the contract manufacturing level. TGA basically elevates the standards beyond even GMP. So there's like minimum requirements that is federal law that you're supposed to follow, which is GMP. And then there's TGA, and then there's SQF, which is for food, for anything that's food-based. You want to make sure that it's manufactured in an SQF-certified facility. But TGA is the Australian government's standards, and TGA is definitely elevates the standards and practices even beyond the bare minimum GMP. And then you have other things like USP, right, United States Pharmacopoeia. But the limitation with USP is they don't necessarily cannot approve a product or give you a monograph for a product that is a little more exotic. Like let's say you've got a certain peptide or a certain alkaloid from a rare botanical or an herb. That's something that's going to be limited that like USP will not be able to give you the approval for. And then finally, you have, you know, what we're doing now is by popular demand now with a lot of the companies that we're working with at Supplement Safety Solutions, we're actually providing a seal as well that it's called Nutravigilance Verified. It's the only physician-directed regulatory compliance program. And so we're going to start offering that seal to be able to be leveraged.
Okay, so that's what you're doing, Nutravigilance, is you're basically certifying. You're going in, you're checking to see if everything that you've just described is actually being done by these players in the supplement industry. And then if it is, you'll slap the Nutravigilance, what'd you call it, the safety
seal. It's a seal, yeah. Yeah, it's like a logo, like a seal.
Yeah, yep. But you call it the supplement safety? Supplement Safety Solutions?
It's Nutravigilance Verified. Yeah, Supplement Safety Solutions seal.
Yep. Okay, yep. Got it. So that's what people would look for as well, would be some sort of a seal like that.
Exactly, because what that seal indicates is it indicates that that brand that's carrying that seal is working with us, and if you're working with us, then that means you're going to have your pre-market safety and post-market safety needs covered, best practices covered, which means we look at all the stuff that we just discussed. Yeah. Pre-market is manufacturing, everything that goes into the product being made and manufactured before it goes to market, hence pre-market safety. Post-market safety is that's the vigilance and the surveillance, the ongoing monitoring of, hey, what's going on once your product gets out there? Are we getting, or did we get a spike, for example, a signal in complaints of GI complaints. Maybe there's nausea, vomiting, diarrhea for a certain batch or a certain lot. And again, that might not be because of any intentional malicious. It could have been that there was a bad batch of a certain raw material or botanical. And if we go back and reanalyze it, we might see that the microbiome analysis is off on that particular batch of that ingredient when it gets retested.
I want to move on to like some of the crazy new stuff, like the crazy new ingredients out there that you're excited about. But what are some of the crazy new ingredients out there? I mean, for everything, that there's like new calorie restriction mimetics, there's new ketones, there are new longevity formulas, new pre-workout molecules. Tell me about a few of the molecules that you're excited about. And also, I'm just curious how you find out about this stuff. I mean, are you hopping on a plane to China and visiting labs in other countries? Are you wandering around the forest with your farmer's hat on, like digging up roots and harvesting things? Like, how does it actually work in the position that you're in to find new ingredients? And then what are some of those cool new ingredients?
Okay, so do you want to start with how we do what we do when we're kind of going on the prowl for new cool bioactive ingredients?
Yeah, for sure.
So that's something we do through Nova Nutra, the third company of the triad, sort of like you mentioned before, and through Nova Nutra, that's where
back to that triad. Nova Nutra, NutraVigilance, and what was the other one?
So there's the Center for Applied Health Sciences is the research arm, the R&D arm, right? Then there's Supplement Safety Solutions / NutraVigilance, which is the regulatory. Then the third of the triad is Nova Nutra.
Okay.
And Nova Nutra, like Nova, like the name implies, is where we look for innovative new ingredients, new bioactive compounds that we discover, then we study, we incubate in our lab. And then we basically button it up so that we have safety data, we have efficacy data, it's regulatorily compliant. And then what we do is when we out-license that to a partner, a third-party partner, like, basically a raw material distributor, because that's not something we do, right? We want to be involved on the back end, the cool science, the discovery. And then we just want to launch it, have somebody take it, and then we want to move on to the next thing in our pipeline.
Right. So if I am over in Finland and I'm out with my twin boys and we're wandering around the forest tasting lindenberry and bilberry and learning all sorts of things about the antioxidant potential of these tiny little tart berries, and I think, well, I'd love to create an antioxidant formula that's like the ultimate Finland antioxidant powder, I would then come to you with the list of things. I'd say, okay, well, I want lindenberry in this. I want bilberry in this. I want, what's that dark orange one that they have over there that's so good? Oh, I forget the name of that dark orange berry from Finland. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Dark orange.
It's like a dark orange. What's the name of that one? Anyways, I'll remember it. I'll remember it later. But anyway, so I would come to you this list. Now, Nova Nutra, you would then go out and find, you'd find basically raw ingredient sources that you can vet for quality and vet that, hey, this is actual lindenberry, this is actual bilberry, this comes from a good source, this one isn't fraught with pesticides and herbicides, etc.
Yes. So that's one approach. That's one strategy. So one strategy is we do have relationships with, let's call them like indigenous medicine hunters, right, if you will, mm-hmm. which is kind of what you describe, like people that are foraging, remote areas of the world, talking to and actually engaging with some of the local, you know, for example, local shamans or local traditional health gurus in those areas or in those cultures. And so that's one way to do it. If you were to approach us with that interest, then we would want to secure a source, start doing some of the analytical work. So there's a few stages to this, right? So one stage is let's discover what it is that we're interested in, a biomass, for example. So you just talked about a few berries that might be some exotic berries, maybe like an amla berry, for example, or, you know, from the Ayurvedic.
Right.
Like Phyllanthus emblica, for example, and you might feel like, hey, they've been consuming this berry for centuries and been using it in traditional Ayurvedic systems or local indigenous health systems for all these different ailments. I'd love to really dig in, peel back the onion layer, if you will, on this biomass to analyze it for its bioactive compounds, and then maybe even concentrate or try to standardize or extract it for some of these bioactive compounds that may be more responsible or predominantly responsible for the effect you're looking for. If you're just looking for general antioxidant profiles, you know, we can talk about that in a, you know, at a future show as well. You know, I think you probably, I don't know how what you feel about it, but the data is really showing us that if you're looking at just pure redox potential, like antioxidant potential, you're probably looking in the wrong place as far as health optimizing or longevity and health span and lifespan optimizing compounds, because really what you should be after is the signaling potential of these compounds that, although they might also have powerful antioxidant properties from a physical chemistry standpoint, that's really not what's causing it to have profound physiologic benefits most of the time. Okay. That's what the science is dictating, right?
Okay.
So what we'd want to do is dig in and see what bioactives are actually responsible for the effect that you're interested in. And then we have to take it into doing an assessment of its regulatory status, meaning is it considered an ODI or an old dietary ingredient that's been on the market before 1994 if you want to launch it in the U.S.? There's international regulatory concerns that we would need to look at before taking a deeper dive and investing big dollars into really developing this ingredient to basically bring it to market as a new branded proprietary ingredient, where we might actually even have some patented, you know, methods, some new novel findings for this new ingredient. Then we take it into some first in human work. So after we determine that it's regulatorily compliant, and then we get an idea for LD50 and some basic safety work in toxicology models, then we jump right to human, we call them preliminary alpha studies in our lab. And what the cool thing about having our clinical research center, the CHS that we talked about before, is that lab can also serve as part of the incubator for any new ingredients that you want to bring to market.
Okay.
So in our lab, we can do our first in human experiments there and see if something's actually moving the needle, because you know, we do things differently than you would in pharma, right? In pharma, you would go through this like high throughput screening and in vitro and tissue culture and cell culture models. And then if you've got some molecular mechanisms, then you take it to animal preclinical. And then from animal, then you start your first in human work, right? Your phase one. That just takes way too long, number one. And especially when you're talking, number two, you know, you're talking about compounds or ingredients that are naturally occurring. And so safety is less of a toxicity is less of a concern. And if we're not able to move the needle in humans in a small cohort of subjects of 5 to 10 subjects, then that ingredient or that product is probably not worth bringing to market per se, or at least it falls lower on our totem pole.
Okay, got it. So, by the way, sea buckthorn berry, for people who are wondering. I was thinking it was cloudberry. Cloudberry is another really good one from over there, but sea buckthorn, that's the one I really like.
Sea buckthorn is high in palmitoic acid, right? Omega-7.
It's one of the few omega-7s. Have that and some reindeer, and you're off to the races, baby. Anyways, though, I know, really good stuff. I'm going to live in Estonia for the summer with my family at this Mind Valley University thing. So I'm sure I'll have some over there too. I'm pretty sure they have sea buckthorn in Estonia. If not, I'll take the ferry over to Helsinki and find me some. So what I was asking though, before we dove down that rabbit hole, was what are some of the ingredients that you like that are kind of like some of the newer, sexier things? Like, give me a few examples. You know, here's an example of, say, like a calorie restriction mimetic that's new on the scene. How you find something like that, and then, you know, how you would then turn around and make that available to, say, like a supplement manufacturer.
Yeah, so I'll give you an example, like a couple of the ingredients in our actual pipeline that we developed, for example. You know, and obviously this is, you know, full disclosure, we have IP on a couple of these ingredients, right? So
a lot of people don't know what that means when you say that you have IP.
Oh, yeah, so intellectual properties, meaning that we have an interest, a financial interest in some of these ingredients that we are bringing to market, because We've discovered them and done a lot of the development work. And then when we license it to an ingredient supplier, then we end up seeing a percentage of their sales. So there is a business interest, obviously, in many of the ingredients that we bring to market, if we're bringing a new one to market. So yeah, I just wanted to get that, you know, full disclosure, you know, not to hide anything. It's just, so to give you an example, so theacrine or T-crine is one of the ones that we're most proud of. And methylibrine or dynamine is the, so methylibrine is the generic, compound, which is a purine alkaloid, and it's sort of a chemical cousin of theacrine. T-crine is the brand name.
Yeah, that's like that's like an alkaloid that's kind of similar to caffeine, right?
It is. So what's really cool about this is the way we went down that rabbit hole is to bring that to market. Is we went back and said, you know, I bet you there's a few rare teas, botanical species teas like Camellia genus, right? So green tea, for example, is Camellia sinensis. That's like the species name for green tea. Or black tea, basically any major white, black, or green tea is coming from Camellia sinensis as the botanical. That's the plant where you can harvest the leaves from. So we went back and found that there was a particular tea called kucha locally in the Yunnan province of China. They call it kucha tea. And locally in those areas, the kids that are going to school, that are in high school during exam time, the parents provide a lot more of this tea to make them sharper and improve their fatigue resistance and allow them to study longer and harder. Whenever somebody comes down with the quote unquote, the flu or some other ailments, you know, this kucha tea is kind of like one. It's been locally in that area. It's been one of the go-to remedies, right? So we decided to take a look at that species. And that species is called Camellia assamica variety kucha instead of Camellia sinensis. So it's basically a different species of tea. And within that tea, you find a bunch of alkaloids like you do in many other plants, right? Plants have a lot of alkaloids, and alkaloids basically just means that there are bitter compounds that are nitrogen containing. They have amine groups or nitrogen groups, so that makes it an alkaloid. Usually has a higher pH if you put it in water, right? So that's where the term alkaloid comes from. So the alkaloids that were found in this particular tea were very unique. It had a unique profile, something that you don't find in your standard green tea or black tea or white tea. So we were really intrigued that it had actually been characterized chemically over 30 years ago, but no one ever did anything with it. They kind of just like, yeah, they characterized like 35 different compounds in this tea, and no one ever really went any further with it. There was some very early work done that we saw that was intriguing in with respect to its analgesic properties and anti-inflammatory properties. But we ended up securing a source. First, a botanical source, and then we ended up basically getting it synthesized. We started looking at it to kind of give you a fast forward, because this is an 8-year process.
Wow. To develop this one molecule, this theacrine.
One ingredient, yeah, to bring one compound, one ingredient to market. Yeah, it's been a long road.
Wait, the molecule is theacrine. What's the ingredient called?
So the branded ingredient is T-crine.
T-crine.
All we did was take the H out and then just kept it T.
Oh,
and then it's that way it looks like T and people can, you know, resonate with, right. Okay, it's like, it comes from T. It is also found, by the way, in a fruit called cupuaçu, which is indigenous to the Amazon in South America. Cupuaçu fruit is Theobroma grandiflorum, so they actually look like cocoa pods, and these cocoa pods are also rich in theacrine. And so we are actually in the process of securing some cupuaçu from Brazil and doing some work with naturally occurring instead of just doing this nature identical synthetic where we isolated just the theacrine.
I love those coca pods, by the way, like coca fruit, coca pods. Laird Hamilton, last time I was hanging with him in Hawaii, he introduced these to me. You just crack them open and eat all these little little cocoa. Are the cocoa beans the same as the cocoa pods?
I think they're a little different. Like the pods are the big, the larger fruit.
Okay.
And then the beans are inside, right?
So yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So the pods, you crack open the big pods, and that's like the big fruit. And then they're usually sitting, the beans probably are sitting in that like thick sort of almost.
Yeah, it's like this mucus like snotty substance.
Yes, yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly, exactly. Yeah, that's exactly it. So that's another place, that you know, mucinage type of material, that white almost paste, is also rich in from the Theobroma grandiflorum fruit. The cocoa pod from that species is also rich in theacrine. So what's really cool about theacrine is the reason we're excited is, at first, you know, we noticed that there were some experiential neurocognitive basically there was neuroactivity there. So people felt an enhanced mood. They felt anecdotally and, you know, just their perception was improved mental clarity, focus, concentration, and energy. But one of the things that made it different, because that sounds a lot like caffeine or like any other stimulant, right? One of the things that made it different was more the mood was more amplified than you get with caffeine. And the other intriguing aspect that we found in our first in-human work with theacrine was that anxiety actually went down. And what's different from caffeine is that when you get these same findings of elevated mood, perceived energy, focus, and concentration from caffeine, it is actually it is directly proportional to levels of perceived irritability, anxiety, jitteriness. There's an edginess, right, to people when they consume like pure caffeine, like caffeine anhydrous, or if they're somebody who carries one of those SNPs in the cytochrome P450 in their CYP1A2, right, where they're slow metabolizers of caffeine, you know, and they're real sensitive to it. They typically, you know, you have that jitteriness or that edginess, obviously, because you get that cardiovascular stimulation. That's something we were not getting at all with our first in human work with theacrine. So we got really excited really quickly, and then we started sponsoring more animal work. We started doing toxicology and safety work in order to do what's called to get this compound to be GRAS, or generally recognized as safe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very high standard that you need to meet. It's a high bar that the FDA sets in order to be able to do a ton of safety work that shows that your ingredient or substance can in fact be consumed effectively on a daily basis safely as part of the food supply. Hmm. That means it's GRAS. So we were able to do all this work to get it. And now there's even animal data that shows that this compound, theacrine, not only is it a neuroactive ingredient that's great for energy, mood, focus, and cognition and nootropic benefits, but beyond that, there's now animal data showing that it has hepatoprotective effect and even upregulates sirtuin, like SIRT3 genes, and mitochondrial efficiency in mice that are fed theacrine.
Wow.
Over
so
it.
So you get almost like an anti-aging effect.
Yes, yeah.
Wow.
So imagine an ingredient that makes you feel almost like caffeine makes you feel, with a little less of the edge, without any cardiovascular response, no hemodynamic or pressor response, meaning no increase in blood pressure, heart rate. And there's animal data to suggest that it actually has health span and life extension benefits. And it has hepatoprotection benefits, and it has neuroprotective benefits beyond just it making you feel good and improving your performance. It doesn't just make your engine work better per se, but it even has neuroprotective benefits in animal models that are that they do what's called restraint-induced stress. So whenever you basically hold rodents down too long, they get exceedingly stressed, and it causes this huge inflammatory response. And it actually causes cognitive dysfunction. Like you cause dementia in these rodents by holding them down that long. They get learning impairments, memory impairments. They can no longer navigate mazes as well. what theacrine has been shown to do in a dose-dependent fashion, meaning the more you give it up to a certain dose, the more benefit you get, is you prevent that from occurring in these rodents who you hold down and you basically introduce this stress that normally causes cognitive dysfunction. Theacrine protects them.
This is crazy.
And when he did the necropsy work, yeah, it actually...
I feel like we could do a whole podcast on theacrine.
It's amazing, yeah. It's really exciting.
I wanted to ask you, we might have to do a part two, because I wanted to ask you about a whole bunch of other crazy new ingredients. But I also wanted to ask you about...
If you want to do a flash, like a lightning
yeah,
round.
Let's do rapid fire. Throw two more crazy new ingredients out there at me. Like, give me the 30-second overview. Because I also, before we wrap up today, I want to ask you also, the one thing I don't want to let you go before I ask you this question, it would be novel delivery mechanisms. Right, because the capsules are so old school. I want to know about some of these patches and lipophilic delivery mechanisms, and I'll do a quick rapid fire with you on that, because a lot of times I get these podcasts going, and I actually, one of the things I do is I go over people's blood work and data with them, and work with companies like Wellness FX to do this, and so I've got the next couple of hours after we finish just going over people's blood work with them. But before I dive into that, my first client is in 15 minutes. So we got a few minutes to play with here. Fill me in on a couple more of these crazy new ingredients. Give me a 30-second overview, and then let's dive into novel delivery mechanisms.
All right. Well, another one we're excited about is, so we're calling it Carno Prime. Imagine you're familiar with beta-alanine, right, in the sports nutrition world?
Absolutely, yeah.
Right, carnosine, beta-alanine. Imagine being able to load beta-alanine the way that people have loaded creatine forever, right? When creatine first hit the market, mm-hmm. You could load creatine in 5 to 7 days. See actual ergogenic, performance improvements from creatine monohydrate supplementation in 5 to 7 days. With carnosine, part of the issue is this, the paresthesia from it, number one, limits people from being able to take more than, 3.2 grams.
The nasty tingling sensation.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the paresthesia, the itching, tingling, burning. So we've managed to find a way to put a nutraceutical blanket on it's called the MGPRD receptor, which is the itch receptor that's responsible for causing the darn, itching, the paresthesia for beta-alanine. Wow. So now if we put a nutraceutical blanket on it, now we can start really cranking your doses up. And one of the interesting things about, beta-alanine is a rate-limiting step for producing for your listeners. They may already know a lot of this, but there's a peptide in muscle called carnosine. And carnosine is a peptide composed of beta-alanine and histidine, two amino acids. So it's a dipeptide. This dipeptide has buffering capabilities. So when you're doing high-intensity activity, usually in that 60 to 200-second range of super, super all-out high-intensity activity, you get hydrogen ions, acidosis, basically, that's manufactured within the muscle, within working muscle. And so this carnosine is there to buffer that. So you can, if you have more of this peptide, then you can extend your capacity to do work at a high level. And so this has enormous application, as for everything from MMA athletes to, CrossFitters to high-level athletes that have a sprinting component in there, to racers, et cetera, cyclists, you name it. So we've managed to find a way to get 15 to 25 grams of beta-alanine per day. Wow. And what that allows us to do is to get a total dose of over 150 grams or so of total dose of beta-alanine. That's basically the magic dose, total dose that it takes to increase levels of intramuscular carnosine, that peptide, enough to about 30 to 40%, enough to where then you get the ergogenic benefit. So we're excited about that. So we're bringing that to market in the next year. There's also other cool stuff like alternative fuels. So an alternative fuel is basically, imagine something that doesn't really burn like a fat or oxidize like a fat, doesn't burn like a carbohydrate, but it's also not a ketone, an exogenous ketone, which obviously have started to make their way into the market over the last couple of years. So I'm excited about that because these alternative metabolic fuels or substrates that don't burn like a carbohydrate or like a fat have you know, metabolic health benefits in addition to some potentially some really cool performance enhancing benefits. Microbiome modulation is an exciting area that's going to continue to explode. And also the endocannabinoid system, man. Yeah.
Before I let you go, because I want to come back to some of these unique ingredients, and we could do a separate podcast on these, but novel delivery mechanisms, they're like patches, microneedle injections, like under the tongue delivery mechanisms, like things that are not encapsulations per se that you've looked into that you think are going to be kind of the next big thing in the supplement industry, or things that you think are going to be really good as far as delivering and increasing bioavailability of a lot of these compounds.
Yeah, you know what? I'll be honest, Ben. I'm not that tweaked by more transcutaneous, more transmucosal, liposomal technology. It's like we've kind of been there, done that. To be honest, right? I'm actually more excited about a unique applications or delivery systems in terms of from pill fatigue, right? Everyone's tired of like consuming 15 capsules a day, or for those of us that are really into the optimization, right? So I think what I'm excited about are like tabletop mobile options, things like 3D printers. Imagine being able to print off your own customized set of bioactive compounds before you leave in the morning or for the next week before you leave on a trip. Imagine being able to print those off. You've got like cartridges that maybe deliver basic elemental compounds, and now you're able to sort of print off your own supplements. Mobile wow. options, I think in the future you might be able to do that connected to your mobile phone. Those are things I'm pretty excited about. I think there's even like recently like a tabletop version that has like access to 25 different ingredients, and it basically ends up creating a shot for you. It's almost like a Mr. Coffee or like one of those like Nespressos or Keurigs, right? Type of setups that you can hit a button and then you end up, you know, basically with whatever you need on demand.
That's crazy. That's similar to I have a friend. He's like this rich guy who lives out in Texas. There's only a few mm-hmm. people in the country that have this, but they have these fancy $70,000 to $80,000 water filtration systems, and they can hit a button and have the water they're showering or bathing in deliver things like melatonin, vitamin C, etc. But they're essentially just bathing in
That's
it
wild.
And using the skin as a delivery mechanism. This is crazy. You go to like a dashboard on a wall. I forget the name of the guy who develops these. I think his name is Leo. I'll see if I can find a link and put it in the show notes for folks. But yeah, it's nuts. By the way, for people listening in, the show notes for this show are over at bengreenfieldfitness.com/Lopez, as in Hector's last name. That's bengreenfieldfitness.com/Lopez. But yeah, I mean, a skin delivery mechanism via water is super interesting. Anything else? Any other delivery mechanisms?
No, I mean, you know, obviously you've got your basic, you know, you've got mucosal, transdermal, mucosal meaning, you know, buccal, you know, using various films like biofilms, I guess could be a cool thing to utilize. You can apply biofilms either to skin or to the inside of your cheek, you know, to your gums. So I think, those are convenient ways to get some of these unique ingredients that have classically poor bioavailability systemically to be able to really crank some of those plasma levels up there to deliver a certain effect, you know?
Yeah. Cool. It's the Aquapellis is the name of that water system, by the way. Aquapellis.
Oh, cool.
It was a dude I talked to at an anti-aging conference. I think his website is phprescription.com, and on that website it's mostly just like their normal filters and stuff like that. But if you contact him and you're listening in and you have a bunch of money to throw around, you too can just take all your vitamins as you bathe. So
that's awesome, man.
Yeah, I've got no financial affiliation with him, but it's an interesting idea.
Yeah, imagine walking into like, yeah, it's almost like you can incorporate that into saunas and stuff. Right?
I know. Like, I know. Wow. If I happen upon $70,000 lying on the street as I'm walking by,
yeah,
I'm going to snag it and get one of those myself. Well, Hector, I mean, like I mentioned, we kind of scratched the surface on a lot of this stuff, so I think I'm going to have you back for part two. But in the meantime, for those of you listening in, the show notes are over at bengreenfieldfitness.com/Lopez. And Hector, after we hang up here, I'll get in touch with you. We'll schedule part two. Sound good?
Yeah, for sure, man. This is fun. I love doing this. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Amazing. All right. Well, folks, in the meantime, I'm Ben Greenfield, along with Dr. Hector Lopez, signing out from bengreenfieldfitness.com. Have an amazing week, and leave your questions, your comments, anything else that you want to know about what Hector and I talked about over at bengreenfieldfitness.com/Lopez. Thanks.
You've been listening to the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast. Go to bengreenfieldfitness.com for even more cutting-edge fitness and performance advice.